So when I got my start in coaching back in 2007, the only training I received was a two-hour course on the fundamentals of basketball. And since then, there has been little training that's been required or provided by the sport governing body, the league, the athletic department, or club that I've been coaching in. And the stuff that has been provided, well, it really hasn't helped me to be a better coach and deal with the growing challenges that exist for coaches around sports parents, mental health, team culture, recruitment, player retention, as well as many other things. And here's the thing, I recognize my experience as a coach, it's actually normal. It's the average experience. Most coach education and training is failing to equip and support coaches to meet the demands and the growing expectations that our sporting culture places on us. Over the last 7 years in my business at TOC, I've come to learn coaches need practical training, giving them the tools to be successful. They need a community to learn and grow with, and they need a sounding board during the season. These three needs for coaches have motivated me to spend the last 3 years developing the Transformational Coach and Culture Certification Program. This training program provides practical tools and strategies for coaches to help them address their biggest issues. Since we've re-released it, we've been fortunate to work with organizations to create cohort and study group plans so they can build a sense of community, bring coaches together to help them grow together and actually create alignment throughout their organization. We recognize the challenge of providing mentorship and guidance to coaches at scale, which is why the training program also has expert coaches providing feedback on coaches' reflections and culture plans throughout the course, and a group chat where they may ask questions throughout the season. If your organization, league, athletic department, or club is interested in providing practical training, community, and a sounding board for all your coaches, contact us for group pricing and a personalized implementation plan. There's a link in the details of this episode to reach out, as well as in our weekly newsletter and on the website, tocculture.com. So today's guest is the assistant field hockey coach at the University of Massachusetts, Holly Turbill. She's had an extensive journey as a coach to bring her from England to Massachusetts, which you're going to hear a little bit about today. But really our focus in today's conversation is about something that I know I'm incredibly passionate about. I know many other coaches are passionate about, which is seeing the coach or even the leader as an educator, a teacher, and practically how we can be better teachers, educators through the questions that we ask rather than things that we tell our athletes. In this episode, we're going to unpack how to learn to wait and the value in waiting and coaching, why asking questions is a best practice and how you can do it, how to minimize your ego to maximize your effectiveness as a coach, and also peer-to-peer communication and accountability conversations. Today's episode is super practical, and we're so appreciative of Holly and the impact that she is having on sport in America. Today's episode is super practical, so I know all of you will really appreciate the insights that Holly shares with Betsy and Nate. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, the podcast to help you grow as a leader and build a better culture. My name is JP Nurban, joined by my friends and co-hosts Nate Sanderson and Betsy Butterick, who do this interview today. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which supports leaders and their teams to build extraordinary cultures through one-on-one coaching, consulting, online training, and speaking. To learn more, we recommend starting with these three steps: read the culture system, subscribe to the TOC newsletter, and get trained through our transformational coaching and culture certification. You can do all those things and learn more about TOC at tocculture.com, as well as learn more about Betsy Butterick and her work as a leadership coach at betsybutterick.com.
We'd like to welcome Holly Turbill to the Coaching Culture Podcast. Holly, if you would, give the audience a brief overview of your sport background and how you got to where you are now.
So the majority of my life I've been a teacher, so mainly secondary, but I did do some from about age 7 to 18. So that's been my background, whether it's teaching PE or head of hockey or head of girls sport or performance sport. There's been lots of different versions, but yeah, mainly in schools. And now I'm out in America, in Massachusetts, coaching at D1 University of Massachusetts.
And how did you end up there? How did we get away from England, if you will?
To be honest, it's been something I've always really wanted to do. I actually coached America in California doing some soccer like 10 years ago. just between my university summers. And then I just knew I needed to build my CV really to show that I was capable of coming out here. And yeah, and it just so happened that Barb had lost two of her coaches at the last minute, I think, and she was looking, and the recruiting agency in England got in touch with them, right time, right place, and it just sort of fell into place. And I was out here in May on a weekend visit and never looked back since, really.
Awesome. And I've had the privilege of watching you coach in working with UMass Field Hockey, seeing you in August and then seeing you again just recently in the spring. One of the things that I'm continually impressed with, Holly, is how you coach. Obviously, you're very credible in the sport of field hockey and also in soccer, but it's the way that you coach that I find most impressive. You mentioned teaching, and I see a lot of that in how you coach, specifically with questions. Talk to us a little bit about where does your coaching style come from and how has it evolved?
Oh, gosh. I guess it has come from teaching, but you know, I feel like a lot of the time, even when I was going through school, you know, when you see people, whether you like that style or you don't. And I always felt like I really resonated with people specifically. So I'd probably learn more from what I didn't like and therefore how I wanted to make sure I treated others when I was coaching or teaching. And that's just then for me, how I built relationships from that was just how I would have wanted to have been treated. From a questioning point of view, it was obviously questioning and teaching is huge, and it's something you learn throughout the process when you're doing your degree and you're doing we call it a PGCE. And one of the things that I remember used to be on my form was you're excellent, but you know, you don't actually wait for anyone to answer the question. And it's something I thought about actually, and it's such an easy thing to do, to ask someone a question, pause for about a second or maybe two, and then feel the gap of awkwardness and just go, okay, this is how it's actually done. But in that situation, we don't really gauge any learning. So those open-ending questions where you might have an awkward pause for a good 5 to 10 seconds until, you know, someone actually has to answer it. And it just gets into the pattern of where they know that they actually are going to have to answer that question. I have a funny time coaching the club UMass team with the younger girls, and they go from like 10 to 18 and they're so shy of each other, but they've got to a point where they know I will stand there for 10 seconds if I have to wait for them to answer the question. And all it's done now is just build that bond between us. We almost laugh about it, but I'm like, I'm not moving until someone answers this question. So it gauges into standing, but I think the fact that they then concentrate more in what I'm saying because they know that I won't answer that question is really, really important. I mean, you know, open and close questioning is a skill. When to use close, when to use open, because sometimes you've got to use close questioning because you need to be quick or you've got to, you know, get through it quicker. So, yeah, I think that would be the biggest thing is learning to wait. When asking a question has been something that I think has really pushed me forward in coaching and gauging their understanding.
Maybe Betsy, since you've seen Holly coaching live, do you think you could give us an example of where you've seen her use kind of a questioning strategy effectively? And then I've got a follow-up question for Holly after that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to me because I not only have I been able to see Holly coach, but also knowing that she's new to the team that I've been more familiar with. So really being able to watch from both sides, watching, okay, how is Holly showing up as a coach in this space to players that I'm more familiar with? And then also, how are they showing up to her as their coach, if you will? So getting to see kind of their reaction, but also Holly's command of coaching. And most recently, when I was visiting, you were starting with, Holly, what's that drill? An activation drill, you called it at the beginning of? Okay, so they're working in small squares, and there was a sender and receiver, a passer and a receiver. And in real time, there was an individual, I don't remember who specifically, but the receiver needed to receive the ball. And Holly, if I'm just absolutely decimating the hockey terms, please forgive me to anyone in the hockey community if I'm off here. So the individual receiving the ball was supposed to step into the box and then receive the ball in a way that was turning away from the pass, but they had to meet it first and then kind of redirect all in one movement. And there was an individual who Holly was telling her, you know, look to receive in the middle of the box. And you could tell this individual thought that she was receiving in the middle of the box. And so there was confusion abound. And Holly stopped for a second. She said, okay, show me where you think you are when you receive the ball. And the player walked to the middle of the box. And Holly said, okay, now set back. And then she said, okay, I want you to get here. And she just, in the dew of the grass of the pitch, drew a line and said, you know, that's where you need to go first. The next time you receive the pass. So it became visually very clear for the player. That's less of a question. And it was for me more of an open and closed moment of, okay, before I tell them you're not getting to the middle or that's not the middle, which I would hear many coaches do in a similar scenario. Instead, Holly asked, where do you think you're receiving the ball? Show me. And she asked for a visual that now they could work on together. And then she continued with the visual by actually drawing a line in just the dew of the field and saying, okay, on the next pass, be here when you receive the ball. And instantly it was a good change. And you could see that the player felt now the difference between where she should be versus where she thought she needed to be. So that was a recent example. What's your question, Nate?
Well, I have two for you. So Holly, if you just can walk us through, if you remember that example or something similar, you know, I think for coaches, the tendency is just to tell them what they're doing wrong or tell them what they're supposed to be doing right. So why question? What is the advantage of engaging with a question rather than just giving them the information that they need to make the correct play?
I think I still think even now, we'll go back a few, but I mean, there's still players even now when we say to them, do you understand? They just go, yes. You know, and we're a year later and some of them gradually will come out the woodwork and say, actually, I don't think I do understand that. And it's like a trust element of, if I say this, am I actually going to get played less? And it's nothing to do with that. And I think there's that danger of them thinking that because they don't understand that they're not going to get the minutes they want, or you're going to think less of them, when in fact it's the exact opposite of that. And I think in this particular incident, I do remember it well because we spoke about it, but I think the reason I asked her where she thought she was standing was because I repeated the same thing at least 3 to 4 times in a direct sort of, you need to be in the middle of the box. You need to be in the middle of the box. You're not getting to the middle of the box. And then we were sort of joking about it. I said to her, where do you actually think that you're getting to at this point? And she was like, here. And I was like, no, you're so far off. You're so, so far off. And the thing was that it was a quick, easy thing to solve because it was quite clear to me that those cues weren't getting through to her. And actually she might be a more visual learner and she needed that. And it was an immediate switch. And had I have just told her, she then wouldn't have been able to recognize that she wasn't quite completing the skill that she thought she was. And I think it gauges into, like, when we're talking about tactics and pressing, it's that specific area probably is most of our weakness comes from that, in terms of understanding it and being able to ask questions. Well, what if this happens? Or, well, they'll come off and say, wait, did you just see that last play? I'm like, no, I don't remember that one specific moment where you were stood in a specific place because you're watching such a big game. And now all of a sudden they'll come over to me, they'll draw it on a board. And then all of a sudden we'll have a bit of a, you know, a conversation about where they stood really and where they could be in a better position. Or we talk about, yeah, but what ifs moments. We're getting to the point where we can now talk about what if rather than, this is a set thing that happens all the time. You need to be here. You need to be here. You need to be here. So we're trying to just develop that. But for me, it's just about gauging understanding and then knowing where they're at and who learns in what specific way. Because they're all different, right? They all learn in totally different ways. And I think that's the most crucial element for me, is working out how each of them work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that approach of using questions, and it's something that I've been trying to grow in more and more, both relationally with kids, you know, to better understand them on and off the court, but also on the field, you know, to understand what they see that I don't see. What solutions do they find that, you know, aren't on my list? And so a couple of weeks ago, I was at a coaching clinic and up in the middle of the night, you know, in a hotel room talking shop with other coaches, and I'm going round and round with my friend Kylie Yates, trying to convince him that it's worth the effort and it's worth the time, because his argument was, look, two things. One, I don't have an unlimited amount of time with my basketball team, right? If we only have 90 minutes on the floor, I don't want to spend 15 minutes sitting there staring at them, waiting for them to come up with an answer, when two, I already have a better answer than what they're going to give me. Now, he's a bit of an old school fella, and I wish he was here to tell the story in a little bit more colorful language. But what would you say to someone that pushes back like that and says, look, we don't have time for that? And what if they don't discover the answer that I'm trying to get them to? Isn't it just easier for me to tell them and them to go do it?
Yeah, I think for some people that might work, I guess, you know, but the overall consensus of a team is that the gauge of understanding when you're playing on that pitch and you have a set of principles that are so core inside them that they know the what ifs. Sure, I think you could say this is how it is, black and white, but the truth is that's not how games are played. There is no black and white in coaching. There is no black and white answer to a player coming to me and saying, yeah, but I did it because of this. And then you start to think to yourself, well, actually, that's a good point, because we've spoke about our principles and I, you know, maybe that is a good point. And I think we're never black and white. And I never think I am always right. And I always say to the girls, you know, play to this set of principle rather than just do this, because you never know what's coming around the corner and you don't know what's going to happen. And I think that's what I would say about it is having that thought process that, you know, all and only your way is the right way. Isn't always the most evolved way for me in terms of coaching. I don't go away from anything and think, you know, the way we press or one specific way we do things is correct. And I learned that from being, you know, much younger and people not taking my opinion on. And I found that kind of quite difficult. And as I've gone through, you know, I've even listened to dads. I mean, I'm sure you know what it's like with sidelines at high schools. But the truth is, even a dad on the sideline could spot something that I haven't seen. So him coming to me and talking to me about his opinion of the game, 70%, I might think, oof, not sure about that. But just that 5% that he's offered, if he's seen something else, it triggers your brain to start thinking about things in a different way. So I try not to be too closed off from it. You know, sometimes if you really want something specific out of it, then that's your closed question. But as a general rule of thumb, if you want to gauge understanding properly and the long term is the process, then for me, that's the most important thing.
That's awesome. And I hope for those listening, you can start to understand why I'm such a fan of how Holly teaches and debriefs and questions into greater understanding. You mentioned, an athlete might say, well, this is what I was going for based on our principles. Or you mentioned the dad on the sideline, and 70%, you might be like, oof. And I heard a couple expletive words in the oof there in my head. How did you learn to let go of, I'll say, ego? Because I hear same situations from so many coaches, and their immediate reaction is defensiveness. This kid's trying to tell me how to coach. This parent's trying to tell me how to coach. And yet you have a completely different, much more open and receptive perspective. Yeah. How did you develop that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, ego is the right word, because I've worked with a lot of people, you know, around coaching that do have one, and I find it very difficult to work with at times. And that's why I really enjoy the coaching team that I'm working with now. I think there was a key moment when I was doing my teacher training. I went to a school as a head of girls' games back in England, and I'd just started and I wasn't the head of hockey. I was there on like a maternity thing. And there was a girl as head of field hockey who didn't have a lot of experience, but bless her, she thought she was great. And I have nothing bad about her to say. It was just in a team talk at the time, the girls were sitting around and I desperately wanted to add something to the left half who I was umpiring by. And I'd added some information at the end of the team talk after she'd finished, just to give some really specific like input on a tactical perspective. And she came up to me afterwards and she said, can you not talk in the team talks? And I remember that specific comment. I just couldn't understand how anyone could think that nobody else could add value and how we were going to put the ego before the players. Opportunity to grow. I just thought that was really bizarre. And I said to myself at that point that no matter what, that you engage with whoever or whatever opinion you come across, whether you agree with it or not. And it's difficult in life to do that anyway. And I wouldn't say it's a strong point in terms of my whole demeanor of life, but in terms of coaching, taking on that opinion, I think has helped me grow and helped me take others' opinion on, because it's impossible to know everything. Even if you think you know everything, you don't know everything, because sport isn't like that. And there's so many different aspects, like the what if and all this. So, yeah, that's sort of the reason why. And, you know, I know we were talking before about my kids, you know, need it. I've worked at a school. My very first school was full of like children that were quite naughty. If I asked them a question, would they probably interact? Maybe not. But again, the link comes from you building that relationship. And I think where you get to with questioning is the vibe of the relationship that you're creating with those players suddenly becomes different, because they can talk to you. They can engage with you. They can learn from you. They trust you. Whereas if you just tell them the answer, there's no form of engagement. There's no level of you building a relationship with them or understanding them. You know, they might start talking to you about something that has happened and the reason why they do that. And I just think having a relationship with the player is the absolute most important thing. And I don't think you build that through one size fits all. My way is the right way. So that's how I feel about it.
I love that. This is really good. I want to go down the path a little bit about, when you, let's say you have a player who you ask them a question and they start explaining in a way that sounds defensive, and though your ego has been pushed to the side and you're open and receptive to their perspective, they are not. How do you work with someone who is very committed to, they did this because they thought it was best and that's it?
God, I'm trying to think of a player I've had do that really. I think I'm not used to that approach, purely because I think most of the time, if you've built that relationship with them and they trust you, that isn't the way they're going to respond anyway. I think they would respond to that if you were in any way aggressive or, you know, quite closed. And I don't think I give off that approach to our players. But I think most of the time, again, it's just about understanding why you ask those questions. Why do you do it? So, you know, when you first start in a team or a coaching capacity, they need to understand how you work and why you do what you do. You know, I only had a meeting with my forwards last week, and I said to them, girls, I really don't mind if you want to ask a question. I don't mind if you do not understand a word I'm saying, even though we've been saying it for a year. It doesn't matter. But what does matter is if you go out on the field and look like you don't understand, then that's a problem. So I would rather we had the conversation. And then all of a sudden we're getting some more conversation and direct conversations that are happening. I can't think of a specific example where I've had that. I guess maybe in the heat of the moment it might happen. And I think sometimes, you know, bringing them back down and them understanding that you're not annoyed with them, you're not at them, you're not being aggressive towards them, just take a seat on the bench maybe with them one-to-one. I think sometimes those reactions might come from their ego or their embarrassment in front of others. And I think you've got to gauge when you're going to call someone out on something in front of everyone else or how they were going to react to that situation. And again, that comes down to knowing your players and who you can, who you can't, you know, sort of stretch it with.
Well, you've talked about that relationship sort of being the cornerstone of all that you're doing, right? Whether it's asking questions or trying to find the right buttons to push or communicating you know, with them as the season goes on. What else goes into building those relationships so that you can have this kind of healthy and effective coaching environment that you're describing?
I think what I've always thought with my players is I want them to know that I've got their absolute best interests at heart, no matter what. And I think if they know that you will put in the groundwork for them and you'll go above and beyond for them, then they're going to be receptive. I've never had a problem with that side of the game, because I've always put them first. The relationship that, you know, I've built with them, whether it's been at school or I've been on the phone with their parents after hours because they're struggling with something, or, you know, just putting in the extra mileage, going in on a weekend just to fix an issue, or they've got a trial coming up, or they want to watch some more video. Like, anything that you can do to go above and beyond to make them feel that you've got their back, then I think that goes a long way. You know, and I think also we talk about being able to have difficult conversations, like in terms of how honest do you actually want me to be? And we laugh about it because with girls especially, you know, they say, oh, you know, you need to say it to me. Don't talk about it behind my back. But the truth is, when you say it, nobody likes it. So we need to build a culture where, with our girls, where if they're going to come and ask a question, they know that they're going to get an honest answer. And then it becomes down to them how they've dealt with that. But at least now they know it's coming from the best possible place. And it's not to do with whether we like you or not, or, you know, you've done something wrong on the pitch. It's just pure candor, really, like just honesty. Like, and obviously you can deliver honesty in a nice way or a really brutal way. So you can deliver it differently, but that's where we've sort of got to our building relationship purposes, so that they know that they're always going to get a direct and honest approach with their best interests at heart.
Holly, knowing that you've coached boys and girls before yep. coming to UMass, for those listening, what difference, if any, do you see in how you show up as a coach, knowing relationships are foundational to both? Can you talk a little bit about your experience?
Yeah, you know, it's been different wherever I've gone, and to be honest, at first I always thought that the boys were probably a little bit easier, just because they were less likely to hold a grudge, or take something that I would say negatively, especially when I was younger coaching. I would be direct and perhaps didn't deliver things in the way that I probably would now, but actually, the last team I coached at high school level, high performing girls school, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Just a different mentality switch in them, in terms of their desire to be better, their desire to put the work in, the do the extra hours. And that kind of showed me straight away, it's actually nothing to do with their gender. It's purely to do with their aspirations and where they want to go. So with both teams, you put the effort to make the relationships. You put in the extra hours after school, weekends, how much hours you put. I mean, they see it. They see it. You know, at the high school level, the parents see it. And I think coming into UMass, it was just purely, you know, when I sat down with Barb, was that my style is build the relationships and get the best out of them. And I think that still would be the case for me. I still believe that you could be the best technical or tactical coach in the world, but if you can't build a relationship, you're going to struggle.
All right, that's it for today's episode. We'll be back in our next episode with Holly to discuss elevating the quality of communication with your team. One of the things that was reinforced in today's episode is the value of having someone from the outside provide you feedback on your coaching. Holly's had Betsy, as well as many others on her coaching journey, observe her and provide feedback on how she could be better, more effective in her communication, more effective in her leadership. And I think here's the thing. If we want to be the best coach we can be, we all need to have at least a few coach, mentors, consultants, or even just a colleague to come in and help us in this way. So don't hesitate to reach out to Betsy or myself if you're interested in outside support. Thanks for listening in to today's episode. Please be sure to share the podcast with people that might find this valuable, as well as subscribe to our weekly newsletter to get the notes to this and every episode. All right, that's it for today's episode. We'll be back in our next episode with Holly to discuss elevating the quality of communication with your team. One of the things that was reinforced in today's episode is the value of having someone from the outside provide you feedback on your coaching. Holly's had Betsy, as well as many others on her coaching journey, observe her and provide feedback on how she could be better, more effective in her communication, more effective in her leadership. And I think here's the thing. If we want to be the best coach we can be, we all need to have at least a few coach, mentors, consultants, or even just a colleague to come in and help us in this way. So don't hesitate to reach out to Betsy or myself if you're interested in outside support. Thanks for listening in to today's episode. Please be sure to share the podcast with people that might find this valuable, as well as subscribe to our weekly newsletter to get the notes to this and every episode. So when I got my start in coaching back in 2007, the only training I received was a two-hour course on the fundamentals of basketball. Since then, there has been little training that's been required or provided by the sport governing body, the league, the athletic department, or club that I've been coaching in that has helped me to be a better coach and deal with the growing challenges for coaches around sports parents, mental health, team culture, recruitment, player retention, and all the many other newer growing challenges. Here's the thing. I recognize my experience as a coach is it's normal. It's the average experience. Most coach education and training fails to equip and support coaches to meet the demands of the growing expectations. Blah, 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 blah. Pull the front. Effective communication. I'd say every coach I talk to wants their team to get better at communicating. How do we get our teams to not just talk, though? Right? Effective team communication. I'd say every coach I talk to wants their team to get better at communicating. But how do we get our teams to not just talk more? Because sometimes talking just on the field of the court can just be noise. But how do we get them to communicate in a way that is purposeful, that is received well and understood by their teammates and drives the behaviors we want to see within our program? We can't just tell our athletes to communicate or to just be better at communicating. We have to teach them. We have to develop those skills. And in today's episode, we're back with Holly Turbo from UMass Hockey, Field Hockey, and Nate and Betsy with Holly unpack with her how to coach Now, in today's episode, we're back with Holly Durbel from UMass Field Hockey. Nate, Betsy, and Holly unpack how to coach your more direct communicators to have greater success with their teammates. They talk about how an elevated way to use film to practice feedback. They discuss a language shift to make feedback a more positive experience for your team, how to frame your questions for better conversations, and lastly, examples of questions for your players to consider. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, the podcast to help you grow as a leader and build a better culture. My name is JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Nate Sanderson and Betsy Butterick, who lead this interview today. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which supports leaders and their teams to build extraordinary cultures through one-on-one coaching, consulting, online training, and speaking. To learn more, I recommend starting with these three steps. Read the culture system, subscribe to the TOC newsletter, and get trained through our transformational coaching and culture certification. You can do all these things and learn more about TOC at tocculture.com. To learn more about Betsy Butterick and her work as a leadership coach, go to betsybutterick.com. Wow, what a fantastic conversation with Holly, Nate, and Betsy. Definitely challenged a few coaches out there, myself included, on some of our current methods of teaching. Here's what I would leave all our listeners with this. Is that this is a process. Becoming a more effective coach, teacher, and helping your teammates to grow this. What a fantastic conversation with Holly, Nate, and Betsy. Definitely challenge a few coaches out there and their current methods of teaching, of coaching. Here's what I would leave all our listeners with. This is a process. Becoming a more effective coach, teacher, and helping your team to grow in this communication is not something you just do overnight. It's not something you just start doing and are good at tomorrow. It's a skill, and skills take time to develop in us as coaches. I remember recently in a coaching call with a client of mine who's coached for over 30 years as a head coach at the Division I level. This coach was frustrated because she just kept falling back to the habit of just barking at her players or just telling them what to do. She wanted to be better at asking questions. And I just reminded her, this is a process. This is something you have to continuously work at and some things you have to untrain. So just like we want our athletes to work at developing their skills, so do we as coaches. We need to work to develop our own skills. Thanks for listening into the Coaching Culture Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with other coaches and friends out there. Take time to leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And be sure to subscribe to the TOC newsletter so you don't miss the notes to this and every episode.